On council business, review of this evening's agenda. Any questions, concerns about the agenda from council? 1.2, future agenda items. I agree with that, especially if we're over our allocations from the district, especially with the growth we have, look at what our plan is. Anything else? Nope. Moving on, 1.3, council leadership task list review. I don't have such a list. That's not my doing this time. I think it's because they're trying to get that list put up on the screen.
The 28th, or do we do first of them? I think coming up on 1st of August, we quite too soon for us to prepare, as we help Councilman Shields prepare for that meeting. And we want to talk about possibly, do you want to do on-site location, off-site location when you get social distancing? Probably the only big room I know when you get social distancing with COVID going on, if we can use Jordan Valley's JATC Center and that big conference room. I know we get enough distance between staff and council members.
Right now, the 28th seems like it's okay for myself.
Is that Labor Day weekend coming up on that weekend?
No, I believe that Labor Day weekend would be the following, the 4, 5, 6, 7. I think Labor Day will, since with the first being on a Tuesday, then that would make Labor Day on the following Monday, the 7th.
Yeah.
Okay. So the 28th, is that a possibility?
Seems to work for me.
Right now.
Okay, now before we pencil something in.
Jared, what does that work for you?
It's all penciling in for me at this point. We'll see what happens with sporting events and tournaments and things between now and then. Pencil it in and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll start penciling and we'll start acting on some of that tomorrow. Does that seem like a reasonable location? It's the only big room I know where if we have the 5 council members and staff support that we can get some good distance between each other in that room.
Yeah, so just to reiterate, I think that's a strategy session primarily for the council. And I think there will need to be a follow-up meeting where we correlate that kind of the results of that meeting with staff in a better way. I don't know that we have to have a ton of staff at that meeting. I don't know if we need a gigantic room to do that. So
I thought this was going to be kind of more driven by us, the council members. We'd each identify kind of some topics or issues and kind of have more of an intimate conversation.
And I did understand it that way, but you start thinking about AVI, those kind of things going on and food for the day. There is some support of staff, just a very bare bones minimum. We're not facilitating it. We're not directing it. We're just there to make sure it happens in a timely manner for you all.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's talk about who needs to be there and let's get it booked.
Yeah, let's pencil in the date and we can talk about location and time and whatnot from there. Okay. I'm really hoping we aren't going to require food and whatnot. Hopefully it'll be a shorter meeting than that.
Okay. And then so pencil in 28th, if we look at possibly yourself, the 5 of you, their quarter, probably legal, and maybe myself and a couple others, I would be my recommendation. But if you want to pair it back tighter than that, that's fine. But I think we need to kind of have an idea where you're going. So when we bring the rest of people on board in the strategy meeting, that we can capture all the components that you're discussing.
Okay. I think what you said is right along where I was thinking. Obviously it depends on, again, if there are specifics in the strategies that we talk about that require a certain department head or someone over the other, but I think we can keep it to a minimum myself, because I think that the focus will be amongst the conversation amongst the council. But it's always good to have legal there to make sure that we don't step out of line.
Okay. The only reason I say is we think about 5 or 8, we can get away with our own space, our own room. We've done that the other day, but we'll talk about some of my updates later on about what we think about what's going on with COVID, by the way. So we'll start putting in a couple options and locking down a few places. We have a variety of locations. Okay. So if you can see the list there, a lot of things have been corrected. And this year we want to make sure we're tracking everything. There's also the Beef Hollow staker site visit. I think we can accomplish that. Now it's good weather. That request is back in February. And I think we can accomplish that if we'll get a few of you there at a time and show you the mining operation and what's projected and where it's supposed to go as you get up on top of the hill. And so we'll start penciling and scheduling you guys in for those field trips. And we think we can accomplish and get that knocked out within probably the next 30 days for for all five of you. Now accomplish that task list. And then we had City Council, the Bonneville study discussion. We had a meeting this week for that and we was unable to come together, but we really need to know how we change the numbers, trying to get out of the MDA that was agreed for Olympic Hills for through the county. It's hard to extrapolate what exactly they're building. And that's when we start really throwing the numbers, how wide the roads are, how long they are, who owns right away, who's, what's HOA, what's not on HOA, what are the true business parks. And I know that a couple of councilmen saw new, let's just say it more like a watercoloring drawings of maybe some changes. And once the developer can start putting numbers, how he's going to develop that, then we can actually start putting that into the Bonneville study and getting those numbers updated for council to review. It's going to be a process, and we'll try to accomplish that meeting again. Maybe it's next week and come together, and Councilman Shields will be able to attend that and to help us guide that through what he's looking for. Any more input on that one? Or
no, I think to be fair though, I think there's two things. One is the Bonneville study had a certain scope based on some certain inputs, and those inputs have changed based on the new plans for Olympia Hills. I think there's a part of it that has to, part of my request is having the study updated to reflect the new inputs. And then there is another portion of that that is a more detailed analysis of what would need to be done to accommodate said development and whether or not that can be done. For example, if in order to build 6,000 homes, you have to widen 126 to 8 lanes in both directions, that's not going to happen. There's a certain physical limitation on the things that can be done. So what I'd like to kind of understand is saying, okay, if there's going to be 6,000 more homes out there, or 5,000 or whatever number it is ends up being, what the impact at, and maybe it's tiered. So there's a 4,000 number, 5,000 number, 6,000 number, whatever that is, that says, at this number of new homes, this is the impact on Harriman, and these are the kind of changes that would be needed to infrastructure to support that kind of development. And trying to tie those two things together so that we can actually see whether or not it's even possible. I think right now it's just hypothetical. There may not be a means forward for us to accommodate that many homes inside of Harriman. And maybe there is, but until we get some better numbers and better studies, it's all just conjecture from all of us. And I don't think that's a good place to be making any kind of decisions from on something of this level of impact.
Right, I totally agree with that. I think we need two things. We need one, let's update the study with what was approved by the county, right? And we don't need it to, I mean, and what it basically said before was we simply can't accommodate the numbers they're talking about. Rather than just get that result, we need to go farther, right? This existing study said we could accommodate the 3 to 3.5 with our existing infrastructure, but we really can't do anything over that unless infrastructure is built up to support it. So the question becomes, if it's anything over that, what are the main pieces of infrastructure that would need to be improved and to what scale depending on that number of units, right, Steve? Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Yeah, exactly. And these are just, let's spitball. So for example, if there's 3,000 units, you only, 126 only needs to be 2 lanes in each direction. But if it's 4,000 units, it needs to be 3 lanes in each direction and you have to do 134. But if it's 6,000, you need to do 134th and 126th and U-111, and there needs to be an east-west highway and Mountain View Corridor needs to be completed and and, right?
Right.
All of those things, you just don't know.
It seems to me that there's got to be some critical mass numbers, right? When
right.
we do these kind of studies and plans, okay, if you exceed a certain number on this road, you're going to have to expand a certain number of lanes, or you're going to have to do that east-west expressway, et cetera. So we need some of those kind of benchmarks to plan to. And I'm, of course, thinking in terms of the Southwest Visioning Study, right? That's going to be ramping up again. So kind of got one leg in one and one in the other. But let's face it, we're going to be the ones that are most affected by this. And if we can do some homework on this end of it that we can take to that body and work with partners, say on the Hill, if people want to have more, then you've got to build up the infrastructure. And if that's where this is headed, we need to do our part in planning and say, this is what you have to do in order to accommodate that. And if we don't do that planning, we'll get what we always got. We're going to force that density on you, and good luck dealing with it.
Yeah, and I think that's been echoed over and over and over again. That's one of the most substantial concerns of our residents regarding the Olympia Hills development and any other development, is if the infrastructure is able to facilitate that kind of development. I think there's minorities that don't like certain housing types, but in general, I think they don't care about the housing types. They just care about whether or not they can get to work on time. They care about how long it takes to get to the grocery store. And I don't want to oversimplify this, but I think that we have some ideas about, you know, we have great engineers. We understand that if, you know, the traffic study says there's going to be this many road trips per day, how much, you know, what intersections can handle that level of traffic and what would need to be done to mitigate that. I think we can kind of benchmark those, as you said, Jared, kind of going forward. And so I don't know if that's in the scope of the Bonneville redo or if that's an additional discussion, but all of that together is what I'm hoping to accomplish. And maybe the Bonneville study redo is just a portion of that.
I think it needs to be part of the Bonneville redo. I think we need to do our work on that end. Say, here are the options. And I'll preface this. I know I've said this a million times, but I'll preface it again by saying that, look, quality of life, for me, I don't want any more density, but if it's going to be forced on us, what I've told Kennecott and Olympia Hills and whoever else is, look, we have to consider any proposal put in front of us. I mean, if you want to put 100 units per acre out there, show that you're going to support it with the infrastructure needed to do it, not just in your area, but on the effect it has downstream. And that's kind of where the disconnect has always been with developers, is that they look at their piece, what they're doing in there, not the effect it has downstream. And so the general plans that we do, that we submit to the county, et cetera, that looks at the whole picture, right? And what we're trying to do from a regional effort now is look at what our plans have an effect on the other cities downstream. So we need that downstream piece of it to be there. If they want to go above what's been planned for, then they can't just increase what they're doing in their piece. They've got to help increase everything downstream. I think having Bonneville research that for us and give us some benchmarks and some ideas to go with in Southwest, then that gives us a starting point versus reacting all the time.
Yeah, and to be clear, that's what I'm really hoping for, is that through all of this, look, we have to understand, and I think it's should be apparent to everybody, Olympia Hills was approved in the county, but I think there's always been an intention that Olympia Hills is going to be annexed into a city, whether that's Harriman or that's South Jordan. Those would be the only two options. I think they want to annex into a city. And I think there's definitely pros and cons around that possibility happening, whether that's in Harriman or not. In order for that to make sense to happen in Harriman, we really have to understand these numbers and make it as much of a data-driven decision as we can to make something like that really work. So that's what I'm hoping to get, more data, better data to help us make better decisions.
Brett, you're on mute.
trying to be polite and keep me muted so you don't hear this backboard noise that's in at home. But as I listen to you speak, it's much more broader than we were thinking. We could do something with our own finance team, our own engineers. I get that for a review, but it sounds like we need to re-engage with Bonneville then. That's what you're asking for too, to have them update what the county approval was through the MDA, what their densities are, the road widths, those type of things. That's a different path than what we was kind of getting direction before. So yeah. We'll pick a step.
Yeah, there's two different things. One is the general thing. I mean, it's they did their original study based off of some very broad projections from the Olympia Hills proposal. We have more details in the Olympia Hills proposal and MDA now than we did before. I think they could redo their development based on those new, or redo their report based on these new information. There's another side to that study that is the economic feasibility of those things that need to happen. You know, the Bonneville study could probably help us identify what needs to happen. And then there's another study that needs to be done to see whether or not we could make that happen. Right? I mean, that's the difference. If these things need to happen, but Harriman can't ever figure out a way to pay for those things to happen, there's a problem. And so we've got to figure out whether or not those two things can match up. Whatever that number, whatever that development is, we've got to be able to figure out a way that it makes sense within our forecast, our budget, our economic realities. And somewhere in there, we're hopefully going to find an equilibrium that makes sense. That's something that could move forward.
And yes. Just to clarify, Brett, I would say that yes. I mean, that was my understanding from our last meeting, was the direction was yes, we want to re-engage Bonneville to update this study and expand it.
Yeah, I thought we were going to use some of that budget too that we got back towards the study. Was I wrong on that?
Yeah, that 17,000.
Yeah.
So they just wanted to put that money towards the Southwest study. It wasn't about Bonneville study, but yes, we're getting that money back. But this is different from what we captured, and I should go back and listen to the minutes. So it was actually a plug in place that Steve was asking for, Councilman Schill was asking for Alan to do, and he's working on that spreadsheet to do that. But what you're asking is to re-engage with Bonneville. That is another layer, which we will get that proposal right out quick, start working on it tomorrow, and find out what Bonneville can do to bring that out and give us a cost, what that might cost us to update, have them update on their end. And I think it is twofold, because Steve Shields, you are asking for the us to do the plug and place so we don't know if it's financially feasible for us. So it is two paths. So we'll get that correct.
It is, absolutely. And I'm really clear that it's two paths, and I know that it's, I know it's a substantial work effort, but I mean, that's potentially the rest of the future of the city of Harriman. I think it's worth the effort.
Okay, we'll bring you back proposal. Actually, probably emailing of our conversations we'll have over the next few days with Bonneville, and then recircle with you, Steve, Councilman Shields, with Alan, have a meeting maybe this next week, so we can get that understanding going in the right direction. Okay.
Yeah, I also want to reiterate, and I'd like the rest of the council to speak to this. My notes and my understanding was that we had strongly discouraged using that 17,000 for giving it to the Southwest Visioning Study because we didn't want to have an unequal representation there, and that we would rather use that money to re-engage with the Bonneville study. Is that what everybody else's recollection is?
That was mine.
What it wasn't clear is about using that money for the re-engage with Bonneville. That's not what is clear. And that's the piece that's fine. We hear that loud and clear this time. Like you said, we go back through the minutes we have to, because we got to have a good understanding. Just like our conversation 2 days ago, Steve, Councilman Shields, you know, I thought one thing, you thought another thing, but we actually went back to the minutes and pulled it out. There it was.
And who was right? Who was right, Brett?
You were right. That's fine. That's what we do. We have to do that to be consistent, to keep us moving forward in the same direction. But we can review on the Bonneville Shore, on Bonneville study real quickly and get that rolling.
Thank you.
Okay, now going down through the list, you already see Sherry's two items were just added to the list. So I said this is fluid. You can actually access no matter where you're at in the world. It's web-based, and we may be changing the program later down the road, but this is a great tool for us. One thing we have left now, I think, is the nothing left on our list. There's more to add to it. You're not seeing there.
I don't have anything to add to the list. I'm hoping at some point tonight we can just get an update on, our striping project on 134th. Timing of completion of that, of how it ties in across Mountain View Corridor, across the top there, and then also the bike lanes configuration of that. So I don't think it needs to go on the task list, but certainly do want to try and get an update.
We could probably cover that in SEAM updates. I'm sure Blake already has a date and time when that's going to be completed.
Okay, thank you.
Or he will by the time the SEAM updates come up.
It's those things that land and everything else that the council's not already updated on your list. So it's kind of that catch-all that happens in the last few days. Make sure everybody's up to speed. Okay, I think we're ready for the next item, Jared.
I can't hear anything.
Can't hear any Jared either.
Man, if we lost our chair, then this is going to be a short meeting.
I do know that they have been having some issues with sound. It is based off of the fact that we are attempting to connect with Facebook right now so that it can be streamed. And in true fashion, it is causing a lot of issues with sound. Extron, we had worked with Facebook and Extron over the last 2 weeks. They came up with an update. We were hoping it would work, but so far it looks like it is creating a couple of issues. So John is working on that. And I did just let them know that we cannot hear Jared anymore. So
I opened Pandora's box. Is that what you're trying to say?
It's okay. We were hoping it would be fixed, but it didn't.
Sammy, I appreciate the effort. I think I think people really appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's we just luckily we have a local representative for Facebook who we're able to contact and kind of express how important this is for us. And then Extron, John and Scott worked with Extron to try to come up with some solutions as well. And in working all together, they came up with an update and we were hoping it would work. And it's working in the sense that if I look at Facebook, I can see everybody, but on Facebook, I can only hear Jared. I can't hear anybody else. And now on this, I can hear all of you, but we can't hear Jared. So I apologize that there are issues.
Can Jared at the at the anchor location hear us?
Now I can't hear Tammy.
Oh no.
Oh there.
Now you're back.
Since we're in the work meeting, we can actually ask next time 2.1 get Michael going. So this is sitting here and waiting, unless Jared can't hear us.
That was my reason for asking if Jared could still hear us, that we could. Don't want to obviously take out the ability for him to respond, but if he can hear, we can at least start that next discussion item.
Good evening. So I've been able to hear your conversation.
Mike, when do you get someone to pull that smart sheet off the screen so we can get your stuff up on the screen?
Well, actually, I'm only introducing Andy Powell. This is part of that, trying to create more connection between the council and the planning commission. Andy is in the council chambers, but I'm guessing if we can't connect with...
So that might not work so well. Yeah.
There's Jared.
So really, this is a forum for Andy, our vice chair.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right. So I just wanted to make one last comment on 1.3, the study, talking about giving the money to the Southwest. By using it ourselves, we're still supporting the Southwest study, because really that effort has been to take the Bonneville study and others and bring them in and analyze those studies. So it's not that we don't want to support that effort. I would tell you we're actually supporting that effort more so by putting that money to work on those specific efforts that then they'll take those. So you can hear me. We'll move on to 2.1. Michael, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
All right, let's go.
So again, I was just saying that this really is an initial step to create more conversation between the planning commission and the council. Chris Berbert, as our chair, is out of town. So Andy Powell, our vice chair, should be in the council chambers and should be ready to just have a conversation with the council tonight.
Come on up.
I am here, guys. Let's talk.
Do you have anything that you want to bring to our attention discussion?
Not specifically. I mean, we had some few action items on we had some items on the agenda last time that we were bringing back to you. There was one specific, I think it's on your agenda as well for tonight, a rezoning of 5 acres. So it was the recommendation of the planning commission to not approve that. There was one dissenting vote that thought it would be okay to do that. So right now that is the recommendation from the planning commission to not approve that. I don't know if you want to get all into any discussions as to why or anything.
I think we hold that until that item. Okay. Council's okay with that. Cause I think one of the things that we had talked about is when we get to those items and we see kind of that breakdown.
Okay.
Whether it was unanimous one way or not, we usually have questions of, well, yeah, did they have any concerns? If there was a dissenting vote either way, what was their concern, et cetera? Right. So just having somebody here to answer some of those questions would be great.
Very good. Yeah. So I'll be here. I can hang out for that as well. But mostly, I think some of the things that we've been discussing as a planning commission is some of the needs that we see within our community is there's really a lack of kind of the mid housing opportunities. There's a lot of townhomes and whatnot that we see in our community. And then there's a lot of the higher end. You know, a lot of times young families are moving into the area. They see an opportunity to come in and get a townhome or something that's a little more affordable for them. But then when they're ready to upgrade, they have to kind of move out of the community to be able to find that next opportunity to be a part of the community. And so we're losing those residents as well. So we think there's a high demand, and if we can do some things to help encourage opportunities for kind of those, I don't know, the 0.2 to 0.25 acre lots, and get some of that going in our community to really help provide an opportunity, a full range for the growth.
And what we used to refer to as kind of entry level single family home.
Yeah, we have a whole bunch of entry level townhomes, but not an entry level single family homes. So we really see a need there. And so we're talking as a planning commission to maybe find some opportunities with, you know, figuring out ways to maybe make homes a little more affordable. We've gone almost to the extreme where we've got a lot of requirements on the home buildings that sometimes make the homes, you know, almost too large for some of these opportunities. Well,
I've had several conversations, I think other council members have, with several planning commission members that, at least in my time, there was a change when I first got involved in all this, what, 8 or 9 years ago now, try to encourage those larger parcels of land to donate property for open space. But the trade-off is to get open space, you have to do the density. And so a lot of ordinances were rewritten at that time. That's kind of when I got involved as a resident, started paying attention. And I think those bigger ones are kind of done, and we need to take that, I guess, get the pendulum swung back the other way
right.
to some equilibrium. Anybody else right. have comments, questions on that one? I think we're open to suggestions for yeah. ordinance changes. And
that's something we've talked about as a commission, is that maybe some of our working sessions, we need to kind of get in and look at those ordinances and see what we can do to maybe improve those, encourage those. We've also kind of challenged the staff to get involved with a little bit of, you know, helping us break down really what is the size of homes and whatnot that we have in our community, so that we can really target and get that full spectrum of opportunities for the residents here.
Sounds good. Yeah, and I'd like to speak to that too, because I think that is the housing market gets manipulated for political things so much, it just upsets me. When we talk about affordable housing, we need to talk about housing that's affordable for people at all income stratas and all income levels in our community. That's not just providing homes for the lowest income earners or the highest income earners, but that's at every strata. And we've got to find a way to be able to, like you said, there's a gap in here between the smaller starter homes and kind of the bigger, well, more established homes. There's a gap in there, and we need to figure out how to make those homes more affordable and more accessible for our community. And so I appreciate any effort around trying to make that happen.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, we've got all these multifamily homes, but that doesn't always, you know, equate to affordable housing right. in our market, right?
Exactly.
You don't want me started on the economic discussion.
Yeah.
It's yeah. the opposite.
I also liked, I visited with Michael a little bit about this too, about, not even just creating that, it's creating neighborhoods, it's creating places where people want to stay and to stay forever. I mean, that community I grew up in, I drove by there, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago, and one of my neighbors that lived there when I grew up, they still live there, you know, and the only reason that other people aren't is because they passed on by already. So I just think that, where are those communities in Harriman? Where are we establishing those for people want to just stay and raise a family? Maybe they add a room on, we add it, turn our garage into a family room and added a room. You know what I mean? Those kinds of things where people wanted to stay rather than constantly hopping around.
Right.
Are we creating those communities, or are we just simply building houses to assess a need to address?
Yeah. And Sherry, if I could add, I think that's exactly the kind of conversation that I would hope that we have in that strategy session.
Awesome.
Right. That's the kind of thing that I'm hoping. So just for point of reference there.
Well, and it's going to take a paradigm shift with our developer partners as well out here as well to help them see our vision, what we want to do as a community as well. So, yeah.
I agree with that too, but I think the important thing is that it's a shift that we can take. We're in a position to take that, and we want to be good partners with our development partners, but we also have to help them understand the vision that we see for the city is what's supposed to drive and direct it, not just their vision, but the vision that we see, because our vision is to reflect what our residents want to see. It's the community wants to see this. So that's the way it's supposed to be driven, I think.
And that's where I think the commission and the council can work together, just developing that vision. I, you know, had a brief conversation with Mike about that, but that's really where we need to come together, combined front and help develop and come together on what that vision will be and work together on that for sure.
Yeah, thanks.
Any other general items you want to bring up?
No, I think that's, you know, those are kind of some of the things we're.
Mine is great. We appreciate you guys
yeah.
being here for us
yeah.
as a resource. We've talked about trying to reciprocate that with the Planning Commission, but I think it's difficult because then what we've been, you guys are part of that training, right? But we don't yeah. want to influence what happens there either, but right. better communication amongst right. us is going to help a lot. So
yeah.
well, thank you and everyone, all the other Planning Commissioners for what you do, and then doing some extra duty for us too.
Yeah, no, it's good to be here. So appreciate yeah. the invitation. So.
Thanks, Dan.
I guess I got to sanitize, right?
Okay, we good to move on? All right, 2.2, all right. Discussion regarding impact fee accounting. Alan.
Blake is actually going first.
Yep, I'll go first, and then I'll turn the time over to Alan. Can everybody hear me okay? All right,
yes.
Great. I got a nod from Clint, so I think it's good. Okay, so I'm going to go through the impact fees. We were asked at last council meeting. This is kind of an impact fee 101 presentation here. So sorry if it's something you already know. I'm going to start going kind of broad, and then I'll dial into what specifically Harriman's doing. And then we'll turn it over to Alan about our impact fee funds, where we're at right now. I don't know if I have control. So can we go to the next slide? There we go. So the first step, what are impact fees? And so impact fees, they are basically a requirement by developers in order for them to get approval for their development. That's the definition of an exaction right there. So they're an exaction. They're a one-time charge. So they get paid one time. That's the only time we get to collect them. And they are to pay for the infrastructure required by that development. So if we were talking about that a little bit earlier, if you generate enough traffic to require a new two-lane highway out to your development, then the impact fees will be collected in order to pay for that two-lane highway. And I'll get into a little bit later about collection areas and how we collect them and where the monies can be used and where they come from. But this is just general right now. The improvements, they can't be temporary improvements. They got to be permanent, and permanent's basically 10 years or longer. And they have to be public improvements. They can't be private, so have to be owned and operated by a local government. The next bullet point, we are strictly governed by state statute. The title and chapter is listed there, and it's a great read if you haven't read it already. It has a lot of the requirements about impact fees, how they're collected, what's required to enact them, all those things. So heavily governed and closely watched over by the development community. So as we do these studies and propose impact fees, many municipalities are challenged if they don't have a rock solid study. And so that's why we hire consultants to do ours and are very careful and cautious when we get them adopted. They're paid for by developers and builders. So sometimes we have someone that comes in and wants to do a 1-acre lot, and they say, I'm not a developer. And they basically are a developer, even though they're the owner and it's like their parents' lot they've subdivided. They've just stepped into the realm of being a developer. And so that's who pays these fees. And they pay them, like I said, that one time. And then the last thing is they have to be used for projects that are on the impact fee facilities plan. That's a plan that's generated from the master plan. And that plan has a public hearing. It goes through a whole public process, and it's actually adopted by the elected body. So that's what impact fees are. Let's see, what they are not is they're not a tax. So it's a one-time fee that goes to the built that's justified by their impact on the infrastructure. So it's not a tax. They're not any other type of building permit or hookup fee. They're often paid for at the building permit time. So that's why they're confused with the building permit fee, because they kind of are all lumped in. But then when our accounting gets the fees paid to them, they split them out into, you know, you get a big $100,000 check, maybe 10,000 of it's to water, 10,000 of it's to this, 10,000, you know, so they split it out. But that's possibly where the confusion comes from. I don't think I can say it enough. It's not a recurring cost. It's a one time. It's not in a savings account either. The city has to spend these fees in 6 years. So from the time you collect it, it's got to be spent on one of those approved projects within 6 years. Another key thing is they can't be used for fixing the road that's bumpy or fixing, you know, a road that's in disrepair. It's for new or upsized construction required by the development. So say we have a 6000 West two-lane road, and it's planned to go to a three-lane road in the master plan. It's pretty much only going to pay for the upsize or the required capacity needed for the new development. And then the last bullet item, that since we're governed by state statute and have all these rules on what projects can be used for, I think there's confusion out there about, wow, the city's got a bunch of money in this account. Why don't they come fix my sidewalk in front of my house? Well, or why don't they pave this road that's been dirt for years and years? And it has to be on the master or on the impact fee facilities plan. And so the council can't just decide to move the money wherever they want to. It has to be moved onto a project that's on that plan. Are there any questions so far on what they are and what they are not? Okay. Okay, so how are they determined? First of all, the elected body in Harriman, it's the city council, gets to decide our impact fees. Do we need to have an impact fee to pay for our infrastructure? And it makes a lot of sense in growing communities because you don't want to saddle the residents. Typically, growing communities have a smaller population that's turning into something bigger. And you don't want to saddle all these residents of the smaller population with paying these huge tax amounts to fund all this infrastructure for the developers. So it makes sense for Harriman to have an impact fee. A lot of cities, as they grow older, like Taylorsville, don't have impact fees. They eventually grow out of them, and then there's other ways to fund infrastructure. Like a lot of times they use CDAs and things like that to fund their infrastructure improvements. So I've referenced a few studies as I've been talking here. There's a certain process to determine your impact fee. The first step is to do a master plan. And so you do a master plan, it looks at your growth over years and it looks at your build out, and you develop an infrastructure system. So I'll talk about roads mostly because that's the easiest one that we see and look at. But you know, we have a bunch of different impact fees that we can collect for parks and storm drain and water lines, but roads is the easiest one to grasp and understand. So we do a master plan for roads, and we generate a road network for the whole city, and we figure out off the general plan how big those roads need to be. And you guys are all familiar with that. And then Alan?
No, it's okay.
Not on mute. Anyway, so the impact fee facilities plan, that one will take the master plan, and it breaks all of the projects that they have, all the projects all the way out to build out, into phases. And so phase one is typically a 10-year plan, and that's where that 6 years spending the money comes in. And those are the projects that get calculated and you collect impact fees for. And so they'll have that 10-year plan of projects, and then they'll put costs to all those projects, and then that gets turned over to usually a firm that specializes in impact fee analysis. And we typically use Zions Bank or Lewis Young Birmingham, are those two prominent firms around, but there are several others that can do it. And then they look at things like reimbursement agreements and bonds. And then if you have built a road and you have some excess capacity in the road, you can count the cost of that as a buy-in, and then that all gets calculated into the fee, and then they put it all into an equation, and out comes a fee. And they usually have fees for single family homes, multifamily homes, and then there's different fees for different commercial uses. So you can have, right now I'll get into it in a little bit and show you the fees we have, but we're working on broadening our fees for commercial, because right now we only have two categories. But then moving along, see, I click the next button, but it's not going. John, can you click the next slide? There we go. So this one's just really quick. How are they adopted? So first, council decides if they're necessary. Then we have to put out a public notice to tell everyone, hey, we're gonna do a study that's gonna change our impact fees. And then we go under contract, and or we can do them in-house. It's just it's a lot more defensible to hire a consultant. They do these all the time. If we did them once every couple of years, we'd be a little rusty on it. So we typically hire a consultant to help us put together our master plans and our impact fee facilities. And We go through the process, develop the plans. We typically have a couple of open houses, although they're not required. We like to get the public to come in and get some input from the public and ideas about where there's some issues. And then we also get to share this information to them about, you know, what impact fees are and what we can and can't use them for. But then we have a public hearing. We have a required notice. I think there's additional notice. I think there's 15, I can't remember if it's 10 or 15 days, but you have to get the notice out. You have to get the document out so that everyone can review it and read it. And then after that public notice period has elapsed, we have a city council meeting and we, you know, have our public hearing there, and then it can get adopted at that meeting or the next meeting. And then the key thing is, after the impact fee is adopted, you can't charge that impact fee that was adopted for 90 days. So there's about a 3-month wait period. That's when everybody hurries up and gets their developments in. If your impact fee goes up, and if it goes down, they wait. So that's just kind of the process of how you get them adopted. So specifically for Harriman, these are the impact fee funds that we have. So we have transportation. Like I said, there's one service area. So that means that in Harriman, everybody pays the same impact fee for like a single family home anywhere in the city if you're doing a single family home. And that allows, that wanted service area means that if you collect a dollar in the northeast part of town, you can spend it in the southwest part of town. So fees for transportation are not specific to development. You can spend them on any one of the projects that's in the impact fee facilities plan. And then I talked a little bit about these being paid at the same time as building permit. Transportation is paid a building permit. You can see the amounts, 2,100 for single family, 17. We only have those two breakdowns for commercial for transportation. And then in our ordinance, there's an allowance that if they don't agree with the impact fee, they can do a study, and then we have to bring it to council. And I think you've seen a few of those studies come in and they've asked for a reduction. The one that typically I've seen get reduced is storage units, because they don't generate very much traffic. And so they do a study and they end up reducing their fee a little bit, which makes it difficult, because then you just know you're that much more short on funding the infrastructure later. So water, they have two service areas. There's an east and a west Harriman. And so that means that dollar collected in the east part can't be spent in the west part. Just simple like that. They are also paid a building permit. And then they have a list of tables. So for residential, it's based on your lot size. And then there's another table if you have secondary water available, or if you will ever have secondary water available to you or not. And then commercial is based on your meter size. The water meter size. One time we asked a developer how many meters they had and what size, and they sent us all their measurements in meters instead of feet. So I was got to clarify the difference there. Storm drain. There are three service areas. There's the east and the west, and then there's also the town center. So service area three is the town center. If you look down at the fees, they're extremely high. They had zero infrastructure in when they came in, so they had to have a different service area to get all their stormwater funded for that area. They also don't have a creek that goes out. Everywhere else has a creek or a drainage that they can drain to, which also keeps the cost low, because they just have to convey their water to that point. And the interesting one about storm drain is it's paid by acre, so it gets paid at the plat instead of building permit. So that money gets collected fairly more upfront than all the other fees. And so that's an interesting difference there. And then the parks is very similar to transportation. Commercial does not pay a fee for parks. That makes sense. And they also get paid a building permit, and the fee is a little bit higher than transportation, but nonetheless, it's there. All right, I don't know if I got a lot of delay from clicking the next slide, or if John's clicking them for me, but the next few slides just show our impact fee facilities plans for each one of our systems. The transportation plan here, this is one that's not yet adopted. We're working through it right now, but it's pretty self-explanatory what it's showing, where the roads and the intersection projects are. There's 29 total projects. And one thing to point out, my little example I talked about a little bit ago about 6000 West, a lot of these projects, well, not a lot, but several of these projects are not 100% eligible to be reimbursed by impact fees. Only a fraction of them are, because there are already existing facilities that need to be upsized. So that's often where we fall short with the impact fees. And that's where, if you try to make those facilities 100% fundable, you'll get challenged by the development community. And since the law is written the way it is, cities often lose that argument, and the impact fees will get adopted lower just so that we don't have those challenges and stall out these studies. But that's the transportation impact fee facilities plan that is going to be coming to you all fairly soon. The next one I think I've got up is it's water. So this is the water facilities plan. There's 28 total projects shown on that one. And then there are other maps to show projects for sources and storage, but this is 10 years of projects shown right here. I think the purplish lines, they're existing ones. So the yellow ones and the tanks, I think the tanks are mostly existing there. All those yellow lines are hard to see, but those are the planned projects. And these maps are just generally to give you an idea of what they look like. If you all want to see the specific studies, we've got them online, or we can get them to you. Let's see, the next plan that should come up is the storm drain. There we go. And this one has been modified a few times over the last few years as we've annexed property in. The storm drain's been pretty on the forefront. One of these projects is currently getting ready to go under construction, 7300 West, and I guess the Mountain Ridge one is also getting close. The outfall down to Rose Creek out of Mountain Ridge is close to getting started. So I didn't tally up the number of projects on this one. There's a handful that are being done right now, and storm drain doesn't typically have a lot of projects. The fee is quite a bit lower than every other impact fee that we collect, because there just aren't a lot of storm drain projects left to do in the city. And then the last one is the parks plan, and it's probably the most current that you've seen. The master plan was adopted not very long ago, and this one's got a lot going on. I don't know how to count the projects or see what's happening there, but the parks one seems to be the most flexible, because it's not tied to, you know, roads that service houses or whatnot. And the last thing I want to talk about is just the level of service. So every one of these facilities that we do, the council decides what level of service we have to provide. So for roadways, for example, since I've been using them as our main example, is we chose a level of service E as the, that's the, once you get to an E, you need to upsize the road. And the idea behind that for a road specifically is that you don't have large swaths of asphalt, 7 or 8, 9 lanes that you're maintaining during the middle of the day when there's small amounts of traffic. So you'll see roads get congestion. You'll see traffic back up for 60 seconds at a signal or 90 seconds at a signal. And that's indicative of what a level of service E is. Go ahead, Sharon.
Hey, Blake, I do have a question on that, because I thought our last transportation study was at a level D. Did we change it down to a level E?
No, E is when you have to upsize. So D is what's acceptable. E is when you're required to upsize. So sorry for that confusion.
That's okay. Thanks.
Yeah. So, So when you look at parks, the level of service there is based on how many acres you have per 1,000 residents or some metric like that. So storm drain is fairly easy, and water is fairly easy. We just have to deliver water at a certain pressure and certain gallons per minute And storm drain, you just got to make sure you don't blow the manhole lids off the pipes when it rains. So we have like a 100-year event is the industry standard. So that's the basic background of how we collect impact fees, how we determine what they are, how we put them in buckets, and how we budget, you know, the money where it needs to go. Were there any questions from any of that? No. All right, I'll turn it over to Alan at this point. He's got all the real numbers. I had all the planning numbers. He's got all the actual what's happened so far.
Well, I'm here. Jonathan's bringing up my spreadsheet. Mine's not as interesting probably as you look at the figures, but just as a preface is that with our impact fees, we have to report every collection of impact fees to the state auditor. We give them a report every week that has every year that has a line item for every single collection we've done during the course of the year. And just go to the next one. I've produced a little bit of a summary of it here. This is very simple summary because this document is actually almost 100 pages long when we send it to the state auditor. Like I say, we have to list every single impact fee that we collect, what subdivision it's from, who the developer is, who the builder is. And so we collect all of that information and that's submitted to the state auditor's office. And when we also have to report detail of what we did with it and what projects it went to, we reported that it's from our master plan, our capital facilities plan. We also have to report where we intend to spend it. Now, this can't vary. Where we put in the report can't vary from what our capital facilities plan is. Whatever those items are that are on the capital facilities plan is what we list to the state auditor. The only variation is that we use the priority that's coming out of engineering, the one that they share each fall with the council. That's the priority we use in reporting at state auditor. Now we're not tied to that priority. The priority is actually set by the budget. But again, as I prepare the budget, I set that to be what those priorities are from what Blake is doing. And he could probably explain how he comes up with his priorities because he has a pretty scientific way of doing that. But Blake and Jonathan go through and they create the priorities. So as you look at what I'm showing you now, just keep in mind that this is very simplified so that I can show you the, and also just to mention that these reports that go to the state auditor with all of our impact fee information and the uses is part of our audit. It's something that our auditors look at when they go through and do our annual audit. They're not just looking at our financial statements. They have to go through and verify state compliance on everything that we have state compliance requirements on. And the impact fees are very closely regulated by the state auditor. They watch everything we do with them. But if you look at this, you'll see this rolling through with balances. We start with a beginning balance. We go impact fees collected. If there's interest collected on it, we add that to it. And we're actually, over the last few years, have changed our procedure to where this is collecting the interest at a better rate. And you'll see that later on. We then have to report any debt service that's being used with the impact fees and any projects that we do. Like I say, this is summary. But as you think about how the money is being spent.
What kind of things would we be servicing debt on?
Okay, for instance.
Just explain that.
Well, Harriman Parkway is an impact fee eligible road. We borrowed the money to pay for that. We borrowed $15 million to go from, $15 million took us all the way from Mountain View Corridor to 6400 West, and it also did a portion of Main Street. So we are paying part of the debt with impact fees. Those were all roads that should have been paid with impact fees. Instead of waiting for the impact fees to be collected, we borrowed the money to build them. And so right now, and you're not seeing it here, you'll see it on the next one. Would you turn it, John? You'll see on the next one that we have nearly $1 million. Well, we have in excess of $1 million a year in debt for roads. When we did the bond in 2015, which built the city hall with about half the money, the balance of the money refinanced the original part of Harriman Parkway, built the second part of Harriman Parkway, and built a piece of Main Street. So half of that bond was for roads. We have only been charging $1 million to the impact fee to pay for that bond. The rest has been coming out of general fund. But if you actually took the actual money that we could use out of that debt payment for roads, it would actually be more like $1.4 million. But we have chosen over the last few years to not take it all from impact fees. But we are taking some of it to pay for that road. We've built some roads with it, and the problem with impact fees is that in most of these categories, you have to have the infrastructure before you can sell the lots and collect the impact fees. So typically, what's happening more often than not is that we're either borrowing the money to do it in bonds or other debt, or we're doing reimbursement agreements with developers because we don't have it at the time point that the infrastructure needs to be put in. And you'll watch that none of these, if you look at the balances, would you move it? Two more slides, Jonathan. We don't need to look at each one of them. But this is the 2019. You can see that water rights, and this is one that Blake didn't touch on, but our big one is water rights. And this is an impact fee that we collect to buy water rights so that we'll have water for the future. Now you'll see that that amount is big at $12,900,000. But remember, we borrowed $12,500,000 of that to buy land for an auto mall. So even though we're still reporting it in our impact fees, because it is still got to be spent for impact fees, most of that is gone at this point until we sell that land. But you'll see you look at roads there, we got $1 million of debt. We have a million. This is looking at 2019 because 2020 is not ready yet. But so at the end of 2019, we had $3 million worth of impact fees for roads. Well, we've spent during 2020 $3 million of that to build Main Street. We've collected enough that we could cover our debt service, but we're essentially at the bottom of the barrel with road impact fees right now till we collect additional fees. And so that's kind of what you see with these, is you'll see that we go fairly low in them as we build what projects we can. Then you'll see not much done in them for a year or two as we build up the balances again. And so, you know, we're But like I say, it's almost always done. The need is there before the money's there. Now, as Blake talked about how this process is done, there's a lot of pitfalls in the way you put this plan together. First of all, you have to project population. And if you miss on the population calculation, you're going to miss on your impact fee calculation. You're putting projects out 10 years in advance. And if you miss on the cost of the projects, you're either going to be long or short on your impact fees. And we're not building these impact fees for the life of the city. We're building them for typically 5 or 6 years. They can go out 10 years, but we're normally looking at them and redoing them even sooner than that. So, you know, things are changing all the time and you're not seeing, you can't do them for the whole city at a time, or you might even come closer than what we can do right now, but we don't. Now, John, would you go to the next page? Because of what I was saying, if you look at this, this is the current reimbursement agreements that we have out there right now. Okay, and you can see in the first four columns, the money that developers have spent, and I say that they've spent, that top one, most of the money has not been spent yet. It's been approved and a reimbursement agreement has been signed. But that's what has been spent and what is being reimbursed from impact fees. The highlighted area shows the amount, the total amount of all of those expenditures. So we have currently reimbursement agreements worth $30 million. Of that $30 million, the next column to the right shows you that we've repaid almost $9 million of that through impact fees. The right column, the far right column, gives an estimate of projected impact fees. Now you can see a lot of the spots in this are not filled yet because we're still accumulating all the data, but we're starting to accumulate that so we can see how the projected impact fees relate to the reimbursement agreements we have. Now, when Blake said things aren't specific to a specific area, that isn't true of reimbursement agreements. Typically when we do, well, in fact, all of these, when we do the reimbursement agreement, we designate an area that the impact fees from that specific area is going to pay the reimbursement. So take just Black Hawk Estates there. Now, or Brooks and Maddie, for instance, let's take the third one there. They've spent $124,252 of improvements that are impact fee eligible. Now, at this point, we've reimbursed them $70,041. Now, I don't know yet if that's all of the projected fees from that, but let's assume it is. But under their agreement, if $70,000 is all we collect from their designated development, that's all they get reimbursed for. So that's something we've got to build into this at some point. But so, you know, the big ones we have on here are Anthem at the top, and that includes some roads that'll be included in the Teton Village that we've already approved. And then down about two-thirds of the way down, you have a $4.8 million and $7.2 million. Over the last 4 or 5 years, a combined joint project between Wasatch South Development and Rosecrest, they've built a water tank and all of the water infrastructure so far in East Harriman. they put up the money up front as prepaid impact fees. And so there will be a repayment of those over time as we collect the impact fees from the area that was designated. Now, the area that was designated for these is much larger than just their development, because it had to be to accommodate the cost of the project. So this is what we're working on right now, to try and figure out what we've already committed, what is still available. And right now, I've only been looking so far at the map areas on these reimbursement agreements. Once we get that defined, then we're going to be able to look at the rest of the city and see what's left. And so it's a work in progress at this point. A lot of work in it that's come in to just get to this single page. It's much larger than that when you look at all the detail. But the attempt here is to figure out what we've already committed, what potentially is remaining, and then we're going to have to put it with all of those maps that Blake is preparing. What projects are left? What needs to be done? Are they going to fit within the time period, or do we have to look in other directions? So I guess that's what I have to show you tonight, and I'd answer any questions that I can at this point.
Any questions from council?
No, other than just I'm appreciative of this. I'm sure this is a ton of work, but it's so necessary that we really have a good firm understanding of this. And I do like also the component you talked about, to where we have to have a clear understanding of all of the development agreements that came, certainly before a lot of us were even serving here, that says, are we, is there a max? Are we limited to what we collect? Those things are such important, you know, key components. So thank you.
Yeah.
And to be sure, Alan, it looks like there's, so the projected fees that are on the right side are the amount we're supposed to be collecting total?
Yes, remaining. So, yeah, and the big ones. And like I say, there's still some holes there that we've got to identify the numbers, because we're going through GIS to pull maps of what's remaining to be developed. The two big ones, and you'll see that the $19 million number there, about halfway down, actually covers about four of those items. It's not specifically there. Plus, in my work papers, the reimbursement is actually broken down by which impact fee we had collected. So, you know, we're going to have more or less for each one, but I couldn't show that in a slide. But we have to identify, the reimbursement has to be road impact for roads, or storm drain, and water for water, and so forth. And I do have that in my breakdown, but I couldn't show you that in a slide like this. But we are working. This was being done by engineering for a long time, and we've kind of stepped into it a couple of years ago as a joint project with engineering, and we couldn't do it without Blake and his team. And they were struggling to do it without ours, I think. And so we've been working on this for a while, and gathering data. And you know, it is a big project, because you take any one of these reimbursements might represent 100 different payments. You know, there's a lot of different things that go into it. And so we're trying to gather all the data so that we can tie down some numbers. We got a pretty good idea of how much we still owe on the reimbursements. However, we look at them and say, okay, Desert Creek, you've already been paid $200,000 of the $277,000 you did. Are there more to collect there? Well, yeah, it shows that we've got $365,000 more we can collect there. So there's a surplus there, and that's what we're looking at, is what's going to be available, and then what areas of the city are not covered by reimbursement agreements or by debt or whatever. So we've got to come, you know, we're on the road, but we're not there yet. But this is a pretty good starting point. The first six columns there are pretty solid. The last column's the one we've still got to work on.
And so, Alan, would you be able to add on to this a projected deficit or surplus for each of these projects?
Say that again. I didn't quite hear you.
Would you be able to add on to this a projected surplus and or deficit for
yeah, that would not be a problem. We've just got, I've got to work with engineering, and what we've got to do is put the maps together with the numbers so that we can say, okay, are all the improvements done on Brooks and Maddie? Is there going to be something else that goes there? And, you know, when we do the projection, is there something more in the cost? So we're going to have to align that with our engineering numbers so that we know where we're at on each project. Then we've got to look at what's left to collect on each one. And then, yeah, we can put a surplus to it. Like I say, my spreadsheets are enormous compared to what you're seeing. There's a lot more to it, but we are looking at what's available. But, you know, the biggest number is going to come from the area, I believe, and this is a conjecture at this point, but I believe the biggest number is going to come from all of the area that's not included in any of the reimbursement agreements at this point. But then again, we've got to look at those areas and see what still needs to be built there, you know, and that'll be the as we put, you know, I've put a lot of work into it, and I know Blake's put a lot of work into it, but our GIS people are the ones putting the biggest part in, trying to figure out what's what and what's included in each of these. You know, you read an agreement that says this is included, and then they've got to go put it into a map and figure out how it relates. And they've put a lot of work into this at this point. And there's a lot more to be done, but we are coming closer than we've ever been. So.
Now, I'd say this is a great start. Alan, I know that's a ton of work and there's a lot more to do, but I guess from my perspective, when new developments come in, we're asked to look at these MDAs and make new agreements. We're kind of at the point where we have to know what our obligations are.
Right.
Obligate ourselves to more. So this is a great start. I know there's a ton of work to do. And we're all
going. Yes, I agree with you. And we need to get it done, and it has become a priority, and a lot of work. Just say I did get my new helper yesterday, so everything's going to be good now.
Well, and I just want to touch on the one point that you made of, you know, your conjecture that the biggest number will be the areas that don't have reimbursement agreements. There's so yeah. many of those that we're still obligated to use those funds for those improvements.
Right.
6,000 West, as an example, there's one that's on the agenda tonight. If we approve that, there'll be an impact fee collected from those folks. When does that improvement get made? Right. So there's a yeah. ton of those around the city in addition to the grade out agreements. So this is key to our decision making. So thanks to everybody involved.
Okay. You're welcome.
We good on that item, everybody? Okay. We've only got 4 minutes left. I don't know if that's enough time to address any of these others, are they? Brett, maybe 2.7?
Hey, Jared, can we, I would maybe recommend we actually, if we can, go to 2.4, or are we just going to, because that is on our agenda coming up in the regular meeting. Or I guess we can just hold all of that discussion.
But those are two different properties. They're two different properties.
Yeah, 2.4 is a different one.
Yep, my apologies. I looked at the wrong one. Thank you for the correction.
So Jared, I could absolutely cover the 2.7 really quick. A lot of you sit on different boards and committees, and it's been requested of you to take some of the state auditors training. I think probably some of you have already done that. I've done it myself for VEC. And I'm actually recommending a few other things that maybe you might want to look at. And if you get time, the Open Meetings Act training by the state auditor's office. And I will ask you, you still don't have to, and it's not mandatory by the state auditors, not asked for as the municipal officials. And that's more for my team that will be taking that part of it. I'm just throwing it out there. I think Jackie has a link in your packet if you don't look it up, but I know it is for your boards and committees. You've already had taken the district boards and training from the state auditors, it'll be required. So I'm just trying to give you a heads up on that. That's all I have.
Yeah, I know I've done that. Has anybody else?
I have.
Very Clint. So if you haven't, Steve, it's one, you just go to the state auditor's site and it's pretty easy. Maybe what, 45 minutes?
Yeah. Probably need it for mosquito abatement, but which was good training. I kind of is a good refresher for several items, but here again, if you have time, when you probably don't have time, but municipal officials, we will be requiring all of our upper leadership in city take that. That's going to be my request out of them. So, okay.
Okay, we've only got a couple minutes left. We're going to look at Jackie for what we need to. We want to have a motion to recess this meeting.
Yeah, I'll motion to recess our work meeting for 5 minutes until we convene in our regular council meeting.
A second.
Motion is second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.